Help! I'm a band teacher, now teaching orchestra. Back in a moment with some tips to help you out.
Strike up the band, so you can give your kids a helping hand. From interviews to teaching tips, you'll add this to your bag of tricks. There's no smarter way to spend your time, so keep it right here with James Devine.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips on how to be a better band teacher.
In Colorado, we have one music certification, and it's K-12 music. It allows you to teach general music, band, choir, orchestra, pretty much anything related to music. It's kind of an outdated system going back to the day when most of our schools in Colorado had one music teacher, K-12. And actually, we still do have a lot of schools that do that. Most of my colleagues do not necessarily feel qualified to jump across to other parts of teaching music, but it can be done. I am brand new to teaching orchestra this year. I've taught band for 20 years. I have had one orchestra class at the high school level, but most of those students either came in knowing how to play already, or I was able to use peer tutoring with students who had played for 7 or 8 years. This is my first year doing orchestra full time, and I want to share some tips with you that have worked for me, things that I wish I would have started the year out with. It might be too late for some of these things for you, but they could be great things for next year if you find yourself teaching orchestra. But some will be able to be applied right away. First of all, I'd like to say, calm down. You're a musician. You're going to be fine. It's kind of a new animal for you, but you will learn along the way. You'll pick up tips from other people. You'll learn and you'll be able to move forward. And the second time that you do it, you'll be a lot better. Think back to the first days when you taught band. You probably felt unqualified despite having college training. I know I did, but I became better at that. The first time I had an oboe player in beginning band, I felt way out of my league, but I got better at doing that also. Here's a couple of things to keep in mind. Tune the basses and cellos each day yourself before school. I find that I really love the cello because it seems to hold the tuning a lot better. The bass on the low note, on the low E, I almost feel like I have to feel the note rather than tune it. I put the tuner right on the bass, but it's hard to pick up because it's such a low note. But the cellos are great. They're easy to tune and they typically hold it a lot better. Now, experienced orchestra teachers may want to kill me on this one, but sometimes you do what you have to do to get things done. On Monday, I have the violins and the violas line up at the piano. I have to tune about 20 students and I get them in tune within 3 to 5 minutes. And I just play the notes on the piano and I take the instrument from them, pluck the string and do the tuning very quick. Don't worry so much about the tuning. Don't throw tomatoes at me, please. When they're first learning, they're playing pizzicato. If the note is close to being on, then you're going to be good to go. You're going to hear occasionally a string that gets out of tune during the week, like majorly, where it's not on the note it's supposed to be on, not even close. And you can fix those as you go along during the week. And also the students have good ears. I found after a couple of weeks, some of them would come up to me and say, Mr. Devine, this doesn't sound right to me. And these were beginners. So I would fix the tuning on their instrument. And that way it didn't take up so much class time. Because if it took up 5 minutes every day, that's a lot of time for the whole week. Find a method book that waits a little bit longer to introduce bowing. The first book I pulled out, it was introducing bowing about week two, and I found myself and my students completely overwhelmed. So that night, I looked through some other method books we have, and I found one that waited a little bit longer to introduce the bowing. So now we are about 6 or 7 weeks in, and the book has just introduced bowing. Couple of tips with bowing. When it was time to introduce the bowing, I took a whole class period to introduce it. We talked about the care of the bow, tightening and loosening the bow. We did some bow motions without the instrument. So the first 20 minutes of class was just talking about bowing, talking about up and down bowing. Then what I had the students do, and this actually went very well. I was surprised how well it went because they were so excited about finally being able to bow. I teach in a Title I school, and I only have about 5 things of rosin to share for all of my classes. So I started calling them up 5 at a time, and I said, okay, the rest of you, go ahead and practice your bowing. Just practice what we talked about with pulling the bow across the string. And I will call 5 of you up at a time to apply rosin to your bow. And I told them about rosin. And in case you don't know, a bow will not play at all if there is no rosin on it. This is kind of a little secret, but if you ever have a student who doesn't play very well, give them a brand new bow at the concert, and then they can't make any sound. So we came up and did the rosin, and the other students were practicing. They actually were quite engaged, and I had the students who were putting rosin on their bow were learning kind of the proper bow strokes also. At first, when I started teaching orchestra, the strings were a little bit confusing to me. So I'm going to give you a couple of tips that I learned. I actually had put this on the board to help me out. The violin from left to right is G, D, A, and E. The bass is like the violin, except as you're looking at it, it's reversed. But if you think of the bass, if you were to hold it up as if it were a violin, of course you can't do that because it's so big, but if you were able to hold it up and hold it under your chin, the strings would also be G, D, A, and E. Now the difference with violin and bass is that G is the lowest string on violin and E is the highest string, and it's reversed on bass. E is the lowest string and G is the highest string. Viola left to right is C, G, D, A. And cello, if you were to hold it up under your chin like a viola, it's the same thing. So now you only have two sets of strings to think about instead of trying to remember them all. Sometimes the tuning pegs will slip. When you're trying to tune it, you get it in tune. As soon as you let go of the peg, it slips out. I learned that the easiest way to fix that problem is to have a piece of chalk on hand. I usually just rub a little bit of the chalk on my fingers. I pull the tuning peg out and rub that chalk dust that's on my fingers all the way around the tuning peg. And that seems to fix most of the slipping peg problems. They do sell some stuff that's some special stuff, but a string expert told me that the chalk works just as well and it's much cheaper. Make sure that your students have the tapes that show them where the fingers are supposed to be on their fingerboard. I haven't learned how to put these on yet, where they're exactly supposed to go, but I think if you just go by the tuning, if you look at the diagrams in the beginning of the method books, and then you play the strings, then you can figure out where the tapes are supposed to go. Mine were already mostly done because we provide the instruments at my Title I school that I'm at. On the violin, be careful of the E string, the high string. I broke about 6 of these before reaching out to one of my colleagues and finding out that is a very sensitive string, and so you have to tune it very slowly and bring it up to just barely to when it's in tune. If you turn it too much, the string's going to pop and break, and then you have to replace the string. There's a traditional seating in orchestra, just like there is in band, but I want to encourage you, I have never been married to seating charts. Different seating is okay. My cellist and one of my groups were really struggling and they kept saying they didn't understand. None of them were seeming to get it. I moved them up to the front, and so they're sitting in the front, and some of my stronger violinists are in the back in that same class. So I figured they need to be up close to the teacher. They were also all easily distracted, and this way they're able to just focus on instruction, and I can tell if they're having trouble. I made the mistake of not testing at first. Kids hate testing. What you have to do is instruct them and tell them the testing is for you and not for them. And also, I think if you help them to get a laid back feeling for it. So I always tell them they're all going to get an A if they work hard, because my standard is that the test has to be to this standard. If you don't have it at that standard, you need to redo it until it gets to that standard. So now that they're a little bit more comfortable and they realize that I'm trying to help them, most of them have A's. There's a few students who have D's and F's, and those are the few that don't seem to care. They're not wanting to get better. They look at you with rolled eyes and they roll their fingers at you and everything is rolled. So now I test a lot, actually, about every 8 or 10 items in the book. In fact, if it is listed as a test, I usually use that one as a test. Now, I sometimes also do just a row of testing where I'm listening to 4 or 5 students at a time to make it go a little bit faster. What you can do for the testing, too, is don't try to do, if you have 25 or 30 orchestra students in your class, don't try to test all 30 of them all at the same time. So we might do a few exercises in the book, then it's like sit in rest position and Johnny, Susie, and Sally, you three are taking the test. Then we go back to doing a few exercises from the book, a few tests, and that way that breaks it up and it also gives them a little bit of break too. When you're playing pizzicato, if you're not introducing the bow right away, their fingers will get a little bit sore. I just try to throw some humor into it. I think one day I had several kids get blisters because it was one of those days where they weren't focusing, and so I just had them playing a lot. We probably went through 25 exercises in the book and reviewed almost everything we had learned. When they complain that their fingers are hurting a little bit, I tell them their fingers are going to get stronger. And I kind of make a joke out of it. I tell them I'm trained in emergency amputation, so if you want me to get my knife out, just let me know. And I usually get a chuckle from that. So I test a lot now. I encourage you to test a lot. In my intermediate group, I actually practice the techniques that they're learning in their book. I went through the method book on all 4 instruments before school started, and that kind of helped me to learn what the pitfalls are. I think I'm only about 75% of the way there. I will probably do that again next year so I can learn some more things to be able to anticipate some of the problems the students might have. For my advanced group, I have an advanced group that plays quite well. They're playing grade 2.5, sometimes grade 3 literature. I admitted to them that I won't be as good as they are, but I also showed them how good I am on my main instrument. Saxophone is my instrument. So sometimes I demonstrate things for them on saxophone. I did enter some things in Sibelius where I wanted them to practice some things from a song, and then I would transpose it to the saxophone part so I could demonstrate for them what I was looking for. And that seemed to have them give me a little bit more respect, because their attitudes at first were, you're not the former teacher, and we know you're not, and that orchestra is not your main thing. And I would actually demonstrate some things for them on the violin. I wasn't as good as them for my sound quality, my tone quality, but I could usually learn the scales in about 2 or 3 minutes. A lot of the scales on the string instruments are just patterns that you have to learn. So when they would tell me a scale is too hard, I would learn it and practice it for 2 or 3 minutes and then show them, see, I can do the scale. I know you can do the scale and you will do it better than me because you have much better tone quality. The last piece of advice I have for you is to let go of the 10%. And what do I mean by that? I was talking earlier about those couple of students who have D's and F's, and it's because they don't care. They're not willing to work. It's a couple of students in pretty much every one of my beginning classes. The intermediate and advanced students, they're there because they want to be. Let go of that 10%. I mean, try to reach them. Do everything you can to reach them, to bring them on board, to show them that they can succeed. But if they choose not to, then there's not really much that you can do. make sure, I know at my school, if we document things, then we're good to go. So we have a section in our grade book called classroom discipline. So for those students who choose not to participate at all, or they're being rowdy and get sent to the back of the class, I always document that in there. I send an email home occasionally for those students, and I keep track of it so that when it comes down to it, we can see here's why they got a D. For 20 days, they chose not to participate and not follow directions. And when the teacher offered help, they didn't take any. I hope these tips have helped you. Just remember, you are a music teacher. Right now, you happen to be teaching music through orchestra, or you might be teaching music through band, or those who have the most admiration for me are those who are teaching music through general music. You guys are the best. Have a great day, and good luck with teaching orchestra.
The Music Ed Podcast, where you get quick and easy tips for how to be a better band teacher.